The Talk of Mid-Maryland, 930 WFMD.
This is the 930 WFMD Weekend Free Talk Express, featuring highlights from local talk shows with your host, Bob Dacey.
Hello, I'm Bob Dacey, and welcome to WFMD's Weekend Free Talk Express, where we revisit some of the best talk shows we have on the air for the past week. So let's sit back, relax, and listen to what we have in store for you on this week's show.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Weekend Free Talk Express. That's WFMD's weekly news magazine on the air. Got a lot of good things for you here coming up. We do have a Christmas Cash for Kids total, in case you missed it on the air this week. We also have Tim and Frank talking about getting free stuff from the government and where it's going to have to end. Jessica Fitzwater and her 100 closest friends are now members of a search committee to decide how to run the county government, which of course has been running for several hundred years already, but she's got to come in and put her two bits worth in. And we also have a special for you, another feature that we offer during the week. It's called House Call for Health, and there's all kinds of cool things over the horizon coming up for those of you that are health-minded and science-minded. We will occasionally run this feature for you. We got a couple of those for you today. But we're going to start off with information that the local delegates got. They're hearing from citizens. Every year in December, the people heading down to Annapolis, that be the little swamp, are going to get together and listen to citizens and the things that, since we're all Republicans, we're not going to be able to get. So, without further ado, let's get started on this week's edition of Weekend Free Talk Express.
Locally, in Frederick County, Maryland, on Saturday, the delegation heading to Annapolis, Little Swampland, heard from citizens, business owners, yada, 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 from Frederick County, who voiced their concerns on what they would like to be like to have addressed or bills proposed for their needs. And it was pretty interesting to hear some of them. And I agree with some, and I guess I'll disagree with others. But one of the I don't want to say it negatively, because I kind of agree with them, but is the one where they have the hatchet throw.
Our friends over at Stumpy's.
Yeah, I like it. We've been there, Stumpy's. A couple years ago, we went down for a Christmas party. So anyhow, what happens is, and it was fun, no question about it. And we could bring in, not that I am, but we could bring in alcohol. We could bring all we want, bottles of wine. And the staff at WFMD doesn't drink very much, so we just brought in kegs. Mm-hmm. And
BYOB?
Yeah. But I would much have preferred that people, that the guests would have had to purchase their alcohol there. Because that way, there is a monitor, if you will. Not that anybody here got out of hand, and I doubt that anybody's ever gotten out of hand. But think about it. If you can bring in your own alcohol, and you're going in to throw hatchets around, which is not dangerous at all, by the way, I would just assume, I presume, I would just prefer, is the word, Tim, I would much prefer that the business regulate the alcohol consumption rather than others who bring it in. Wrong? Right? Disagree, Frank? What's your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think that's the answer is...
I do, too.
There could possibly be problems with people who have too much to drink.
Sure.
Even if you don't allow liquor to be sold at the premises.
Absolutely.
If they bring it in, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're there and it's not monitored, I guess you monitor the best you can, but if you bring it in, they don't have a whole lot to say about, you know, how much you consume.
The one they talked about mostly was a mini golf course, allowing liquor to be sold there.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know we had anything like that around, but if we do, God bless them real good. I think the point is, if you're going to use alcohol, it should always be monitored. Self-monitoring, I wish, was the answer, but that doesn't always work. So if you're going to an event, it should be monitored. I think that's the only common sense way to approach something like this. And I would urge the legislators, I would recommend that highly, that they give a license to a place like Stumpy's or miniature golf if they want to have, you know. And I guess it's a way of life. People like to have you know, alcohol while they do things. Now, my question coming up about smoking legalized marijuana, will you be able, I haven't seen what the law says yet. I know you can purchase it. I know you can have it. I know you can use it. But there are probably limits on where you can use it. So, I mean, in the courtroom, you know, if you're getting ready to go up for a reckless driving charge, I don't think you should sit in the courtroom and smoke a doobie. I am not a lawyer, although I was a brilliant judge. I don't think that you should have I wouldn't encourage you to smoke a doobie in the courthouse. So I must be, and I haven't seen any of the law yet, what is proposed, other than, we want recreational marijuana legalized. Okay, what's the rules? So that's going to be interesting also to find out and I always wondered if you had medicinal marijuana, could you take that on the job? I mean, if you got a sore toenail and it hurts you and you have a marijuana card for medical marijuana, can you take marijuana while you're working because your toe hurts? I don't know. I don't know what the rules are. I guess if you don't tell anybody, the fact that your production is slowed down to zero, especially if you're making widgets and you're not producing many widgets, then maybe we have a problem. But that's just some of the things we'll have to think about coming up. I would think the next couple of years in the in Annapolis are going to be interesting, to say the very least, regarding new laws that will have to be proposed regarding our new wonderful marijuana rights that have been afforded to the people. It's just... I just don't want to have to say I told you so. That's just my opinion. You know that I all stand about that. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to be educated about it because I refuse to be educated about something I know so little about, or so much, I should say, or so little. So if you have an opinion on what's that's going on, I also want to, I miss talking to real people. Not that we didn't talk to real people. Well, we really didn't, Frank. I mean, other than the people that came in to see us here and over at Hampton Inn last week, I didn't really get to talk to, I talked to Ryan and Bob and Frank and Ron, everybody, but I didn't talk to.
For 2022 Christmas Cash for Kids campaign, we are sitting at
$143,125.65. Woo!
Thank you.
Christmas Cash for Kids from WFMD. I was going to tell you about the word I'm talking about today, or the words I'm talking about, or the phrases I'm talking about. The first thing I want to bring to you, just a little tidbit of information. You heard of the Oxford Dictionary. Well, each year they have an opportunity for individuals to, write in new words that should be placed in the Oxford Dictionary, or new phrases. And the phrase this year is goblin mode. Frank, do you know what that means?
No idea.
Okay. Well, Frank, if you'd been up and cool, you'd understand it. But goblin mode is what so many people seem to think happens to a lot of other people other than themselves. It is a type of behavior that is unapologetic, self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. Isn't that wonderful? This is the word, this is the phrase, goblin mode, that was selected by the Oxford Dictionary. Isn't that wonderful that we now have a new term for those who really don't produce in society, those who are on the dole, those who are being taken care of by others, those who really don't want to work, living in basements and, spending half the night on their Xboxes or Y boxes. I don't know what they do. They just sort of think, I'm in a goblin mode, so just get away. Well, I think that's what happens to a lot of people in a lot of countries. But it should not happen to the people in the greatest country in the world. That's right, the United States of America. That's right, where opportunities abound. There is no person in this country at any age who cannot become successful, because nothing will stop you but you. But don't expect it to be handed to you. No. The government hurts itself as well as hurting this population. It's people, if you will. Every time it gives you something that you don't have to work for. Every time it takes from you something that you have worked for. This is not how you run a progressive society. And I don't mean progressive in the term of progressivism as a liberal branch. I mean the fact that we will not move forward, that the country will stall. And if you stall, if you're not going forward and you're stalled, you're the same as going backwards. It's the same as a tie. You know what I'm talking about? I heard about one yesterday in a football game. I don't know why the NFL has any idea in their mind why they have this rule that you can tie a game. They should let them play till someone wins or loses. I think the idea is fine to start it off with, and you may keep the same rules in, but you should not end it after the first overtime. There should be no limit on overtimes until a winner is reached. That's just my humble opinion. I like to hear what you have to say about that, even if you're watching. And apologies out for my fellow countrymen. But the United States did very respectably in the World Cup. We're out, but we weren't expected to win the World Cup. I didn't expect that. I would have loved it, but I didn't expect it. I do have earth-breaking news. I have a much more appreciation of soccer. I mean, I tell you that on Saturday morning, I believe it was, I watched the U.S. play. Wasn't, you know, overly impressed with our play, but I understood. I recognized the athleticism. I recognized the pure endurance and strength, but I have much more appreciation now. You know, I know it's a communist game, but you know, if you're going to be gauge in it, then we should send the best and have the best, and we have that opportunity. In fact, I was watching Brazil kick South Korea around on the field today. When I left the game, that's right, Brazil was up 4-0, and ought means zero.
Managed and staffed by people who understand Mid-Maryland. 930 WFMD.
Jessica Fitzwater and her 100 closest friends are now members of a search committee to decide how to run the county government, which of course has been running for several hundred years already, but she's got to come in and put her two bits worth in.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I am so very excited to be here this afternoon. Yesterday was a big day for Frederick County, a big day for me personally as well. After the swearing-in ceremony, someone asked me if I was planning to take the rest of the day off, but Rick Walden and Tony Bowie, our co-chairs of the transition, will vouch for me that I came back to the office and we spent over an hour and a half continuing our work building up this transition process. When I said, let's get to work, I really meant it because this work is too important to take an afternoon off, and I'm just so thrilled about the direction that we're headed. So we're here today so I can share information about our transition process. Like my administration, the transition team will prioritize inclusion, sustainability, and accountability. Those values will guide their work and infuse their recommendations throughout their work. This will be a community-driven process that will embrace big ideas on how we can build on our strong foundation and be innovative in addressing the opportunities and challenges coming to Frederick County. So I'm just so thrilled. The transition team will have 8 committees. It sounds like a lot, but there's a lot of good work to be done. One is going to be a senior advisory committee or senior advisory group. These are leaders from the community who have spent their careers and in some cases their lifetimes investing in our county and in our community and doing amazing work. Marvin Osherman, Elizabeth Chung, Sue Hecht, Ted Luck, Helen Profiter, Joe Richardson, Dr. Olivia White, and former Senator Ron Young and former Mayor Ron Young. I am just thrilled to have their support along the way, and they will be key in vetting our final report and helping to make sure that we haven't missed any opportunities or missed connecting any dots that are going to be guiding our work as we move ahead. Then we will have 7 working committees that will focus on some of the great priorities and opportunities that we have moving forward. The knowledge of our county and the history of how things work here will really benefit these working groups as we move ahead. So the 7 working committees are first, economic development and jobs. This will be co-chaired by Linda Thane Morgans, a small business owner among the many other hats that she wears, and Jason Lee, CEO of Lee Building Maintenance. Our Education and Workforce Development Committee will be co-chaired by Missy Dirks, President of the Frederick County Teachers Association, and Melissa Muntz, 2 Melissas together, Executive Director of the Student Homelessness Initiative Partnership. Our Government Innovation Workgroup is going to be co-chaired by Guyon Sampson, Chief of Staff to Frederick Mayor Michael O'Connor, and Dr. Rachel Mandel, a healthcare executive with over 30 years of clinical, executive, administrative, and consulting experience, and someone who really has an eye for seeing the big picture. Our Housing and Quality of Life Workgroup will be co-chaired by Ryan Trout, a senior-level housing policy and program professional, and Mark Long, who serves on the Frederick County Affordable Housing Council, the board of the Interfaith Housing Alliance. We will have a group for Public Health and Human Services, co-chaired by Malcolm Fergal, the Executive Director of the Frederick County Healthcare Coalition, and Dr. Denise Rollins, Executive Director of the Whole Heart, Grief and Life Resource Center, and co-owner of the Rollins Life Celebration Center. Our Public Safety Workgroup will be co-chaired by Chip Jewell, former Deputy Chief and Division Director of Volunteer Fire and Rescue Services here in Frederick County, and the current president of the Liberty Town Volunteer Fire Department, and Kim Dine, former Frederick City Police Chief. Lastly, our Sustainability, Infrastructure, and Transportation Workgroup will be co-chaired by Dusty Rood, President and CEO of Rogers Consulting, and Barb Trader, who played a key leadership role to advance climate change action, including the Climate Emergency Resolution in 2020 and the work that followed. I truly want to thank each of these individuals for jumping on board, for saying yes, for volunteering their experience and expertise to guide our work. And I want to thank the nearly 100 Frederick County residents who have agreed to serve on these committees so far. Each committee will have a specific charge of examining how government works and can work better in their assigned areas. And as I said yesterday, we have a very strong foundation to start on. We really do. So the transition team will be informed by several important documents, including the Livable Frederick Master Plan, the United Way's ALICE report, the Equity and Inclusion Leadership Team's 2021 report, and the Climate Emergency Mobilization Workgroup's 2021 report. So I'm so excited that the first transition team meeting will be here in Winchester Hall on the first floor this upcoming Monday at 6:30 p.m. The meeting will be open to the public and will be broadcast. And this will be an opportunity for the committee members to meet one another and for us to present the critical information that I shared and some of the guiding framework for moving ahead to make sure that each work group can be successful in our pretty short timeline. They will work through February to gather information, hear from government officials and outside stakeholders, and develop recommendations. Our goal is to assemble those recommendations in a transition plan, which we'll publish in early March. That document will be a way for the public to measure our progress over the next 4 years. And to truly be successful, it is incredibly important for this process to be collaborative, community-driven, and open and transparent. So I encourage people to visit www.frederickcountymd.gov/transition to learn more about the process and to share their ideas for making Frederick County a place where everyone has the chance to live, work, and thrive. We truly want to hear from you. Suggestions and ideas will be shared with the work groups, and we'll be sending the link out to many of our community partners. And we encourage you to share it as well so that we can really get a lot of public feedback during this process. Finally, I want to introduce Pat Murray. Pat is coming on the administration as my senior advisor, and he will be working, he will be providing staff support to the incredible volunteers who are working on the transition team. Pat served as chief of staff to Senate President Miller, and he was an aide to Speaker Mike Bush, and most recently served as chief of staff to Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski, where he was involved in managing the transition process 4 years ago. So Pat is a little allergic to cameras, so but he will be doing great work behind the scenes to support the team and the work beyond. So this is going to be a lot of work, and it's important that we get it right, because the transition report is going to be a living, breathing document that residents will be able to use to measure our progress and hold us accountable for our work. I'm incredibly grateful to our co-chairs, Rick Weldon and Tony Bowie, who hopped on right away and have already been just so valuable to the process, our committee chairs, senior advisors, and everyone who has agreed to help out. And I'm looking forward to hearing great ideas from the community as we continue down this path. So thank you, everybody.
Fox News puts out a feature called House Call for Help, and always features the latest in scientific and medical previews. If you miss it during the week, here's a couple of those that we decided to round up for you that seem particularly
interesting. That were raised last year that cost us a superintendent and a number of other higher-ups.
This is House Call for Help. Pfizer is tweaking its COVID-19 booster for infants and young children. The pharmaceutical company asking the FDA Monday to replace its third vaccine dose with an updated one that targets two Omicron variants, BA4 and BA5. Kids under age 5 would still receive two doses of the original Pfizer vaccine before receiving the updated third shot. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says fewer than 5% of children younger than 5 have been fully vaccinated against COVID. So far, this season has been particularly rough for young kids with respiratory syncytial virus, known more commonly as RSV. Cases of that surging, causing hospitals to fill up quickly. While no vaccine exists for RSV, medical professionals have been recommending that the public get their annual flu shot and keep up to date with COVID boosters. The early detection of cancer can help save lives, and now researchers in Japan say they've created the first ever early detection kit for pancreatic cancer, a unique process using tiny worms to try and identify the hard-to-diagnose disease. Researchers say it's important to be able to sense very trace amounts of chemicals. That's exactly what these worms do. Measuring a millimeter in length, about the thickness of a credit card, the worms are a species of nematodes, roundworms with exceptional smelling capabilities better than humans and dogs. Users send urine samples to a lab where scientists genetically modified the worms to swim away from cancer samples. If the results show a high risk for cancer, patients can undergo additional testing and avoid false positives. The worm test costs a little more than $500. Researchers hope to have it available in the U.S. sometime next year. Pancreatic cancer is the fourth leading cause of cancer death in men and women in the U.S. Elon Musk says his brain-computer interface that could one day help folks control devices with their brains is almost ready for human trials.
We've been working hard to be ready for our first human, and obviously we want to be extremely careful and certain that it will work well before putting a device in a human. But we've submitted, I think, most of our paperwork to the FDA, and we think probably in about 6 months we should be able to have our first Neuralink in a human.
Musk speaking at the company's headquarters in California Wednesday, saying there are two applications they're aiming for in humans. The first is restoring vision. He's hoping they can even help those who were born blind. The other application being in the motor cortex for those who have no ability to operate their muscles. That would enable them to operate their phone faster than someone who has functioning hands. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
That about wraps it up for Weekend Free Talk Express. We hope you enjoyed some of the interviews brought back from this past week's broadcast on Free Talk WFMD. Join us again next time. Until then, I'm Bob Dacey.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com, a service of Holtzapfel Heating and Air Conditioning.